Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSillaCast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, May 18th, 2008, and this is show number 152. This is also the long-awaited three-year anniversary episode. I'm just so excited to be celebrating three full years of this incredible adventure with you. I may get a little maudlin here because I want to tell you how much it means to me. I simply love doing this. I love the feedback you all give me, the encouragement, the questions, the suggestions. Heck, I even love it when you write to me and tell me I'm all wet about something, which does happen. I love learning the new tools, digging in to separate the great ones from the merely good, and tossing out the awful ones. This show has given me a satisfaction in life that I just never saw coming. I've made so many friends in the virtual world all across the globe. That makes me feel all warm and fuzzy inside. I consider all of you good friends. We'll have to be ready for shifts in the technology over time because, you know, this thing's going to change. But I really hope that wherever this evolves, whatever it evolves into, has the feeling of community that we have today. Thank you for three wonderful years. And with that, I am now going to turn the microphone over to you.
Hello, Al. This is your husband, Steve. So the question of how I found your show doesn't really apply to me, since I've seen it evolve from, well, before it began. However, I can give your listeners a little insight on the genesis of the NoSillaCast. As I recall, you started listening to podcasts shortly after they began in October 2004. I believe the first ones you listened to were Adam Curry's The Daily Source Code and Adam Christensen's The MacCast, something about podcasts created by Adam C. After getting into the new broadcast medium, you started to think, hey, I've got a few tech things I'd like to talk about, and thought you'd give it a try. At the time, you believed it would be a nice little hobby to help fill in your free time. Little did you know, however, the time, expense, and effort you were committing yourself to. Well, I have to say, I've really enjoyed seeing the NoSillaCast evolve and mature over the past 3 years. You know I wouldn't miss an episode since it keeps me entertained during my Saturday morning run with you. I really do admire you for creating and refining your show, and you know you have my full support as you move forward. Congratulations on 3 years of the NoSillaCast. Please keep the great shows coming, and as you know, I'll be sure to stay subscribed.
Hello, this is Listener Ron. I found the NoSillaCast by random chance when I was over at Allison's house one time and, just hanging out. I went upstairs and there was Allison recording her first NoSillaCast.
Hi, this is Neil. Okay, so Allison wants me to send her an MP3 file containing a narrative on how I found the NoSillaCast. In true NoSillaCast style, I decided to write down my thoughts and memories and then read them. First, a little about myself. I'm about the same age as Allison, a happily married father of three children. I'm a radiology information systems analyst at a well-respected community hospital in South Florida. I purchased my first Macintosh, a Mac Plus, in 1987, and I've been a true Mac snob ever since. Now to the point of this little speech. As I remember it, and with a tad bit of Google-assisted memory, in early 2005, Apple released the iPod Shuffle, and in May I bought one. And I started looking for podcasts that interest me. iTunes had yet to release version 4.9, the first version that supported podcasts, so things were a lot different back then. And I think, if I remember, at some point during the summer, I heard about the NoSillaCast when Allison sent a promo to Adam Christensen of the MacCast. I remember Adam Curry also played one of Allison's promos on the Daily Source Code, but that was a later on. I remember I liked Allison's style and content, and I listened to all the older shows that she had recorded. And Alice remembers this part a little better than I do, but at some point I listened to all the shows and they stopped, so I sent her an email with a polite, hey, what's up? Well, as Allison likes to tell the story, at that point she realized somebody was really listening and enjoyed and appreciated all the hard work she put into the shows, and she's been going strong ever since. So, Allison, congrats on the anniversary, and keep them coming.
Hi, Allison. Listener Margaret here with my story as to how I found your podcast. It was February 2006. I owned a Macintosh, but I really didn't know how to use it, so I decided to join a Mac users group. I almost didn't make it to that first meeting in February. You see, while the users group was in my neighborhood, that particular night I happened to be an hour's drive away. On top of that, I'd been to the dentist a little earlier and wasn't feeling all that great. Still, I bit the bullet and drove in to the meeting. Let me tell you, that room was freezing. On top of that, it was mentioned that the meeting was going to last 3 hours long. Whew. Well, I knew I could always duck out it if I wanted to. Why am I telling all of this to you? Because you and your buddy Ron were the guest speaker at that very first meeting of mine. Your topic? How to make a podcast, of course. Your presentation was really good. In fact, after the presentation, I went up to the table, introduced myself, and said, "Hey, great presentation." I then asked you a software question, which you promptly answered, and then you handed me your calling card. That could have been it, except a week or so later, I decided to send you an email thanking you for the information, and as well as to say again, what a great presentation. Imagine my surprise when I got a 2-page response from you. We are now good pen pals, and I'm a faithful listener of the show.
Hi, Allison. Congratulations on 3 years of an absolutely excellent podcast. It takes an awful lot of time and effort every single week to get the show out, and I don't think you've missed any weeks apart from when you're well from the Caribbean, and we'll have to forgive you that. You were asking us all for our homework when we first heard about the show, and I can remember exactly the first time I heard about the show. It was an advert you did on another podcast, which is pretty much fallen by the wayside now. It's pod-faded almost completely. It used to be weekly, but I think it's now about bi-monthly or every 3 months or so. It's called the Apple News Log. That was it, the Apple News Log by Adrian Bacon. And it used to be a little promo, and it was just you basically saying your standard spiel about how you believe in solving problems. And your efforts was like little Macintosh bias. And I thought, you know something? This is the podcast for me. Because you're excited, you sounded interesting, and you sound like you had a really nice take on things. So I headed on over, subscribed myself, listened to all the back episodes, and have been a huge fan ever since. So here's hoping for at least 3 more years. Congratulations, and the best of luck.
Hello, I'm Dale Comey, who is recording this message amidst the hills and redwoods of Mill Valley, California. I'm thrilled to tell you how I first became a listener and subscriber to Allison's weekly podcasts. It all began the last week of March 2007 when I attended the 3-day Gear Media Tech workshop that was held at the Zeum Theater in San Francisco. I am a Mac consultant by trade, and I signed up to find out more about this buzz called podcasting. On the first day of class, just before our lunch break, one of the key presenters, Alex Lindsay, urged the audience to socialize and network by going out to lunch in small groups. He discouraged us from eating alone. I remembered seeing only one or two familiar faces during registration and none where I was seated. I took Alex up on his suggestion and found an ad hoc party led by Allison that was heading off to a local restaurant for lunch. The rest, as they say, is history.
G'day, Al. I can't remember 3 weeks ago, let alone 3 years. I think I found you just noodling around on iTunes, tapped in Mac, and there you were. I thought I'd tell the story of how we became friends. I was at work with my shuffle and loving it. Loving podcasts, loving my shuffle. Well, I dropped it down a kitchen drain, and I was so angry at myself. So devastated. What was I going to do without my shuffle? So I stomped around the building for a good 10 minutes and then suddenly thought, there's an excuse to buy a Nano. So I was just a listener at this stage, but I thought you'd like the story, so I fired off an email. And you fired straight back and said, "Rose, you are so my people." And that was the start of our beautiful friendship. Happy 3 years, and here's looking for the next 10 years. Good on you, Al.
Hi, Allison. In response to one of the homework assignments, I have come to claim Asia from Bruce, who claimed on show 139. I am permanently residing in Hong Kong, which I have done so since 1, and I am now 12, so I have lived here for more than 10 years, and I have only listened to the Nozilla cast in Hong Kong since I discovered it last year, because I didn't go anywhere since I went to Canada last year. For the 3-year anniversary, I have only listened to the Nozilla cast 1 year. I found out the Nozilla cast by the interview you did with Victor Cajal of the Typical Mac User podcast back in September of 2007, and have been hooked since. Keep up the great work and a happy 3-year anniversary.
Well, hi everyone, it's Elliot here. Today I'm responding to Allison's homework assignment on how I came across the No Silicast podcast. So, I found the No Silicast through Victor Cahiao's Typical Mac User podcast. Allison was on his Typical Mac User Live podcast back in March, and she was talking about her show, and it just sounded like a really interesting show that I thought I might enjoy listening to. So I went ahead and downloaded it, and the rest is pretty much history. So yeah, I guess that's how I came across Allison's show. I want to wish Allison a happy third year anniversary on the No Silicast podcast, and I hope that many more awesome shows come out in the future, because I really enjoy listening to Allison's show, and I enjoy also being part of the community and being able to send things like this in, little audio snippets, because it's really good fun. So, happy anniversary, Allison, and keep up the good work.
Hello, Allison. This is Martin from the German Outback. You were asking for a short recording from us listeners how we located the Mozilla cast. My participation to this might be a curious one. The short version just is that I found you by enjoying your part in the Mac Review cast. To find the Mac Review cast, however, was a complete different story. Wildly googling around for a problem in my Mac startup days led to the site of Timber Porton, and some curious fate made me subscribe to his podcast. Since first catching my first podcast, I dropped listening to it a few times before I really got hold of the idea of podcasts. If I remember correctly, it was the second episode since my latest dive into the world of podcasting, and you were talking about the issues with reinstalling your MacBook Pro. After listening to it, I located your website, hit the subscribe button, and I'm stuck ever since. Congratulations on the anniversary, and keep up your great work.
Hey Al, this is a longtime listener, Susan Gerhardt. I think I first saw No Silicast on a list of female podcasters from a consulting firm, Contentious, in Colorado, which was trying to encourage more women podcasters to come into the field. Having had a technology career myself, I had enough male voices for a lifetime. So I was looking for a female podcaster with a sense of humor and a geek streak and to broaden my sense of culture, and No Silicast has delivered on that. I want to thank you for a few things. The fact that you are always looking for software that solves problems has brought me Winderstad, a little utility that I use all the time that helps to find those big files that are looking there on your disks. I also want to thank you for your attention to accessibility, because you can bring together ideas from visually impaired people, your listeners, and you understand some of the technology that we use, and you're trying to bring attention to the difficulties of putting information into more accessible formats. So it's really helpful to have podcasts like that. And third, I never thought I'd be in the same category as Martha Stewart on anything, but your Dumb Questions column, you showed we've got a similar problem, and I hope we'll find a solution that we can both afford. So thanks again. I know it takes a lot of work to put together a podcast like this. Much appreciated. Bye.
Hey, Allison. This is Dennis from Minnesota. Just want to drop you a quick comment here to congratulate you on your 3-year anniversary of the No Silicast podcast. I discovered your podcast after you began doing guest segments over at Tim Verporten's The Mac Review Cast, which is a wonderful podcast in itself. And no, Tim's not paying me to say this. Well, okay, he's paying me, but he's paying me in freeware. Hey, wait a minute. In all seriousness, I really enjoy the originality and humor that you bring to your tech podcast. Keep up the great work, and we'll talk to you soon.
Hey, Allison, it's David Sparks from MacSparky.com, and I just wanted to wish you a happy anniversary. I first heard of the NoSillaCast podcast when you started giving those great reviews on the SurfBits podcast. Now I'm a loyal subscriber and you can't tear me away. My favorite story about you, Allison, though, was when we were at Macworld and I was blathering on about the Napoleonic Wars. And you looked me square in the eye and said, "Dave, I got no clue. For me, it's all about the technology." Keep up the great work, Allison, and happy anniversary.
Hi, Allison. It's Jane from Perth, Australia. Thanks for 3 years of your NoSillaCast podcasts. I guess it must have been around September 2005 that I started listening, because I bought my first Mac in August of that year, and it was shortly after that that I started the hunt for all Mac-related podcasts. I ditched some after listening to a few episodes, but kept listening to the best ones. As for how I found the show, I wish I could remember where I heard about the NoSillaCast, but no matter how hard I rack my befuddled brain, it just won't give me the information. But that's not important. The really important thing is that since listening to my first NoSillaCast, I haven't missed an episode, and always look forward to the next. You just keep on podcasting, Allison, and we'll keep on listening. Cheers.
Okay, Allison, you asked for it. This is Tony Wall and his Zoom H2 microphone coming at you to tell you how I found the NoSillaCast. It's all the Mac Mommy's fault. Plain and simple, it is all the Mac Mommy's fault. You probably heard her and I discuss at some point or another that we're contemplating creating a podcast of our own. Well, as we were trying to compare different podcasts that we liked and disliked, she pointed me in your direction and asked me what I thought of it. This is something that we both agreed that we liked, and I think we both subscribed to it. This is probably about 3 weeks ago for me, and I've listened to every episode since. So it looks like you've got another loyal listener on your hands, whether you like it or not. So congratulations on the anniversary, and keep up the good work.
Hi, Allison. This is the Mac Mommy, and this is my best attempt at fulfilling the homework assignment. You hear that clock ticking? It's a reminder to keep this short, unlike my emails. Well, the truth is, I cannot remember exactly how I found you, so I'm going to make something up. Since Tony Walla blames me for discovering you, I'm going to blame Adam Christensen. His was the very first podcast I subscribed to, and I got hooked, and I never looked back. From there, I'm pretty sure I went into iTunes and plugged in Macintosh as a search term and discovered you there. Much to my delight, I tuned in and found another geeky mom out there just like me. You've kept me company through many a sleepless night with my toddler. You've also kept me from going insane by keeping me geeky through all of this new parenting stuff. So yeah, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. You've been a true inspiration to me, Allison, so thanks and keep up the good work. Okay, let's see how long this clip is. Oh, where's the stop button? There it is.
Hi, Allison. This is George in Tulsa. I pledged never again after my sonic disaster of a Kindle review. Then I heard Jane's fabulous review of Time Capsule in number 148, recorded on the same Logitech headset. Jane taught herself GarageBand just for your podcast. My only joy from GarageBand had been that pleasant whoosh when I deleted it from my computer. Not wanting to reinstall and learn GarageBand, I had made the Kindle review using Audacity, a donationware program I've used to make ringtones. Jane's excellent results from the same hardware I have sent me to the Audacity manual. There I learned to open the Audio MIDI Setup panel in the Apple Utilities folder and turn up the input volume. Did that, and I think it helped. Life was so much easier when it just worked, but maybe not as much fun.
Hey, Allison, it's Jimmy Lee from Indie Radio Chattanooga. I just wanted to say thank you for giving me a mention every now and then. I really appreciate it. I love the show. Bart is a fantastic addition to the show, you know, and thanks for extending the segments for me. I appreciate that. How did I learn about NoSillaCast? I heard you on Tim Verporten's show, the Mac Surf Bits podcast. So I had to check it out. I had to see what you were all about, and I've been a listener ever since I switched to the Mac. It's been a year and a month now, as a matter of fact. You can go into just a little side tip there. You can go into your Apple preferences in about this Mac, and it'll tell you how long you've had it. But, yeah, so I just want to thank you very much. I love the show. And, you know, you guys keep up the great work. Have a fantastic show, and congratulations on your success. And here's to much success in the future, Allison. Bye-bye.
Hi, Allison. Rob here from across the pond in the UK, but England this time rather than Ireland like Bart. You set us a homework assignment to produce a short clip for you on how we found the NosillaCast, and I'm happy to oblige. First, a little background. I only switched to Mac about 4 months ago and wanted to find out as much as possible about my new operating system of choice. Actually, it was a choice that was partly made for me, but as you would say, that's another story. So, how do I find out as much as possible about the Mac way of doing things without having to visit hundreds of websites and go cross-eyed with reading them all? You guessed it. I subscribe to some podcasts. It started with some video clips produced by that well-known tech geek Chris Perillo, and through those and time spent in his chat room, I soon discovered more content. The MacCast was next, along with the Mac Observer's Geek Gab, for Mac Eyes Only, and a British one too, British Mac with Will Green. And he certainly keeps the side up for us eccentric Brits with his blend of music, tips and chat. All of those are worth a listen as a switcher too. But where do I figure in this, I can hear you ask in those dulcet tones of yours. Hold on, I'm almost there. It was a short hop from the MacCast to the MacCast loop, and that's where I discovered Victor Cahiao of the Typical Mac User podcast. So I subscribed to Victor's feed post-haste. And who should be co-hosting the first show iTunes downloaded for me? Yes, it was you. So there you have my story of how I found the NosillaCast. And even though I came kind of late to the party, I've been working my way through your back catalogue of podcasts, learning and laughing as I go, and I'm convinced that's the best way to learn. Hope I haven't waffled on for too long, as this is my first time recording a sound clip on my Mac, so if any of this ends up on the cutting room floor, I won't take it personally. Thanks for an entertaining and informative podcast, Allison, and here's to the next 3 years.
Well, guys, I gotta say, I'm overwhelmed. As I listened to each of these as they came in, I kept thinking, yeah, that one's my favorite. That's the best one. And then I'd get another one and another one and another one. I mean, so many of these were just, they were funny. They were heartfelt. And boy, I'm welling up here, guys. I really, really appreciate all of you sending in these fantastic little recordings. I love the international flair. I mean, we were all over the globe on this one. So I want to give a big shout out to all of 19 of you who made reviews for me, and I just want to thank you, and you know I'm going to do it forever now. You're never getting rid of me. Well, we have another special audio treat today. Honda Bob himself decided to do a review of the Honda Element, and he made the recording all by himself. So here's his review.
Hello, this is Honda Bob. And today I have a long-term review of my Honda Element. When I bought this car on March 26, 2005, I called it a car to differentiate it from my truck. I fully intended to put a lot of miles on it. After all, it was for business use. In 3 years, I have been cross-country to Louisiana 3 times. I was really surprised how well it handles the open road. I just set the cruise control at about 70, sit back, relax, and listen to my fully loaded iPod. You already read in my website about all the modifications that I have done to the car. All the modifications are still working perfectly. My air supply system just keeps on pumping. Last month, I reached a milestone, in my book anyway. The Element turned over 100,000 miles, and I thought I'd write a review on how it has performed over the last 3 years. Let me tell you, I was surprised when I went back over my records and found that I used over 5,000 gallons of fuel. My average fuel economy over the 100,000 miles is right at 20 miles per gallon. To tell the truth, I was expecting more than this, but I guess the 500 pounds of tools and equipment in the back kind of put a damper on my mileage. I will admit, though, that when I made the trips back to Louisiana with all the equipment taken out, my mileage did increase to 27 miles per gallon. As far as oil changes go, I have never changed the oil. I have a supplemental oil filter system that uses a standard roll of toilet tissue for an oil filter. I change the toilet tissue element every 1,000 miles or so. The oil just never gets dirty. Repairs? About $208. The only part that really failed is a tensioner pulley for the drive belt. The rest is front and rear brake pads and a couple of axles. The average cost per mile for everything, including fuel and original cost of the car, is 2.7 cents a mile. The finish is still bright red. I know Allison likes to clay bar and wax cars often, but I do it myself about every 3 months. It does get a wash at least once a week. So far, I have only one little dent in the left rear quarter panel. I think someone bumped it with an elbow or something. Paintless dent removal will take care of this next month. And that's about it. I fully expect this car to see a million miles on the odometer.
Now, somehow in that, Honda Bob neglected to mention the fact that once I did clay and wax his car. Well, maybe I didn't clay it, but I did wax his car once. Anyway, Honda Bob uses his Honda Element to come to my house to deliver his tender, loving care of our Hondas and Acuras. And if you'd like that same care, and you live in the L.A. or Orange County area, give him a call at 562-531-2321. Or heck, you know he's a geek, so shoot him an email at hdabob@aol.com. HDA Bob's mobile service is not affiliated with Honda, Acura, or Honda Worldwide. Well, it looks like we're not going to have enough time for Dumb Question Corner this week, but trust me, the dumb questions are still rolling in, and keep them coming. We'll get to those next week. In the meantime, how about a little chit-chat across the pond? Well, it's time for another exciting episode of Chit-Chat Across the Pond with Bart Bouchatz from bartbouchatz.ie. How are you today, Bart?
I'm very well. We're just back in from enjoying a lovely cycle, cut slightly short by the fact that Allison still can't count to eight.
Hey, I never said I was good at arithmetic. I believe I said I was bad at that, right?
No, that's true. And I didn't double-check the calculation, so it's sort of my own fault. But anyway, we got the time wrong by now.
Yeah, and I mean, I even have a widget up that tells me what time it is in Dublin, what time it is here, so that I can see that it's 8 hours, and yet I calculated it out to 9 somehow. So I'm not in charge of it anymore. It's your job, okay?
Okay, so from now on, it's my fault.
There you go. Well, we're being really creative on the audio today. I'm sure you guys listening have noticed a little bit of a difference here, and we promise not to keep talking about Bart's bandwidth, but it did create an opportunity for a unique solution. So, Bart, why don't you explain what we did today?
Well, we decided to remove my broadband from the equation altogether because it ISO cut me off completely because I shouted at them a lot. And my new broadband doesn't arrive until the 26th, so I'm going insane at the moment without actually any broadband of any description. But what I did figure out, thanks to my good partner, who managed to point out that you can actually set Skype to forward calls to your cell phone. So Allison has called my Skype, and Skype, on my behalf, has called my cell phone. So even though Skype isn't running, it's still doing that, so I'm now chatting away on my cell phone, and my cell phone works just fine. So we have a stable way of communicating at last, and we should have done this weeks ago.
This is just amazing. I mean, we've lost a little bit of quality because the cell phone itself isn't great, but we are actually looking at a jitter of 20 and a round trip of 168 milliseconds, and I don't think we've ever seen anything under, what, 250 round trip?
Oh, yeah, round trip's always at least 200 milliseconds, if not more. I think they say that for interviews, if you want it to be sort of clean, we're not always stepping on each other, any more than 200 is not acceptable, and we've been up at 400, 500, 600, and I think the last time we had 2 seconds or something.
Yeah, it was 2 full seconds, so we just had to take turns and sit back and rest and hope the other guy would give us a chance to talk again.
Exactly. No, it's a lot easier this way. But as far as I sort of sound like someone calling into a radio show now, which is not unusual because I am on a phone, I suppose.
But I like the solution because it does give us the more rapid delivery here, and there's no breakup at all. Now, as far as cost to anybody, because I think other people might want to try this solution, as far as cost, I'm not paying anything on my end. Now, do you have to pay anything on your end?
Yeah, I have to pay Skype's standard rate, which is a couple of cents a minute, or 1 point something cents. I don't know the exact price, but it's exceptionally little. And I just pay that for Skype to forward from Skype to my cell phone.
So you uploaded into Skype, you gave them you have a balance there?
Yeah, I have a balance of €10, which I'm hoping will do me for quite some time.
Yeah, that's fantastic. We talked for a few minutes yesterday, and you said you couldn't see any, it hadn't changed the amount of money you had in there, so it was small enough you couldn't even see it.
Yeah, exactly. And the better half does this regularly, and he says he doesn't notice it. So I guess it's very cheap. Of course, if we disappear within 2 or 3 minutes, then it's because my money went out again.
Yeah, we'll find this out the hard way. Well, anyway, I think that this is a solution that could help other people and might be a creative thing that, I mean, I could forward my Skype to my cell phone and leave Skype, you know, basically available to people. Now, does Skype have to be running on your machine and an active internet connection for that to work?
No, that's the great thing. I don't have Skype set on at all.
Wow. That's pretty cool. So you set it in Skype while you're connected to the internet, and then you can quit Skype, shut your machine down, and you're good to go, huh?
Yeah, I think it's under preferences, call settings, and it's forward unanswered calls.
Wow.
And if Skype is on, it'll ring a few times and then forward, and if Skype is off, it'll just forward.
That's pretty cool. That's really, really neat. Well, I'm just happy to be able to talk real time to you. This is just great, and this is fun. I like it.
Yeah, absolutely. We should have done this a long time ago. Anyway.
Yeah, so you had some a really interesting blog post this week that I wanted to talk about. Why don't you tell the listeners what you were talking about on your blog?
Well, it's a few days ago now. I got the phone call I knew was coming. I've known it was coming for a long time. Last year, my grandfather got broadband for the first time. Now, my grandfather is no ordinary grandfather when it comes to computing. He was actually the first person in our family to get a computer. I think it was an 8086 or an 80286 from Amstrad. Had 16 colors and, like, you know, 2 megabytes of RAM or something ridiculous like that.
You mean the one my mom's still running?
Actually, probably very similar to what your mom is still running, yeah. But he's always sort of been the first. So he was the first to go to a Pentium machine. He was the first to go to Windows 95. He was the first to go to Windows ME, which was great because none of the rest of us did after that. So he sort of saved us all from that one. But in recent years, I guess he slowed down a little. So he's sticking to XP because he's decided that he's never upgrading to Vista, not until he dies, never. Which is interesting because he said exactly the same thing about Windows ME. He said, I'm never upgrading to XP. I'm staying with this blood eye. He keeps changing his mind. So
who knows? Keeps living.
He's also said he won't go Mac because he's too old, but maybe. Give him a couple more years, maybe.
So you let him go to Windows, huh? So how long ago did he buy the machine?
Oh, the machine he has now, he got last year, I think. And at the time, he did actually seriously consider going Mac, but he decided he was too old to learn something about old dog and new tricks and that kind of thing. And he's very, very fond of his very old software, so he still runs all of his old games he had from the days of DOS 4.
Oh.
And he runs them inside DOSBox sometimes. Some of them are still actually running Windows XP, so he runs them natively. And then, you know, most of what he does is play games. He's very, very fond of his train simulator, and he has, like, a USB-based train dashboard thing that has levers and knobs and things, and
how
like
fun.
Driving a real train. So the reality is, you're never going to any of that to work under Linux or Mac.
Right.
So he is stuck on Windows. It is the reality. Because he doesn't do spreadsheets, he doesn't do any of that kind of stuff, and he's surfed the net very little, although he's beginning to get into it, because he's Belgian, like I am, and he lives in Ireland, like I do. But all of his relatives are all in Belgium, and it's still an international call, even though we're all within the European Union, so it costs quite a bit of money. So he's become an absolutely huge fan of Skype, and he Skypes everywhere now. He even Skypes me, because it's just easier while he has the headset on. He prefers that to having to pick up the phone. So he's become an absolute Skype addict, and he's getting into the whole email thing, and internet banking to him is this amazing thing. And he doesn't go into the bank anymore because he hates queuing up and all that. So, you know, internet banking, Skype, that's sort of what the internet gets used for the most.
You know, Bart,
but anyway,
I'm starting to think we ought to get him on here for an interview. I think he might be fun to talk to.
Slight flaw in that plan. His English is terrible because he's not a native English speaker.
Oh, okay.
And his hearing isn't the best. So I chat away to him in Flemish, but I don't imagine the listeners are going to be all too keen on that.
Might be a fun little recording where we'd go, what?
Yeah, it's actually quite interesting to hear us talk about tech stuff, because all the tech words go into English because he knows them in English and doesn't know them in Flemish. And everything else is in Flemish, so it's a bizarre sort of conversation with two languages muddled into one.
That would be.
But anyway, he rang me.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, he rang you.
To tell me that his machine had been infected with spyware, and something called WinFixer was looking for money off him to fix his computer, which I'm quite sure he says broken.
He didn't click it,
and I knew
it
was coming. He didn't. He's quite paranoid. Well, I've sort of beaten paranoia into him. I've got credit cards on the internet. So he rang me straight away, which is good.
Yeah.
I think that's sort of the moral of the story. Beat paranoia into your elderly relatives.
Well, and your young ones.
Well, particularly your young ones. But yeah, just be paranoia to all of your relatives. It'll save a lot of trouble in the long run. So at this stage, it got me thinking, you know, on the one hand, Windows is the best possible thing for beginners. You know, especially in Ireland, there are very few Mac users here. There are very few Linux users here. And there's no way that a beginner can use an OS that the rest of the family doesn't use. Because you need help. You can't be on your own. So you need Windows.
You know, I say that to people when they ask me what they should get, and there's someone who doesn't live near me, I'll just tell them, I'll say, what is the person who's going to help you with your problems going to want you to buy? Because if I tell you Mac and they told you Windows, they're going to wash their hands of you when you go asking them a question. So you really want to get what the guy who's going to help you that told you to get.
Yeah, that's it exactly. It really does come down to, you know, you have to do what people can support you on. So in that sense, Windows is the best for an awful lot of people. But on the other hand, Windows is the absolute worst for somebody who doesn't know what you're doing on the internet, because you're just living in constant peril. And I've known for a long time, it's not a case of if my grandfather's going to get infected, it's a case of when, and that when was this week. So it's a real sort of conundrum, I don't know the word for it, but the real dilemma, you know, Windows is the best possible and the worst possible solution all at once.
Yeah, definitely.
So, you know, since you're so fond of solutions, I think anyone who's in this situation where they have a relative who they're worried about, who's, you know, new to the internet, sort of poking around for the first time, or maybe even for a few years without power users by any means, and you want to protect them online, to me it comes down to the big four, as I call them. And particularly if something has gone wrong, you really need to deeply scan the machine. And to be honest, if something goes badly wrong, you should probably reinstall it from scratch. But he wasn't at all keen on that idea, so we went with the big four instead. So you have the obvious one. You have AVG, which is your free antivirus. Or if they like, they could spend money on Norton or McAfee.
Now, that's not very recommended anymore because of how much they slow down your system, and they're just very, very heavy applications. And they frequently cause problems with connectivity.
I don't like Norton. Norton is a huge, huge, megalith, very Microsoft-y sort of bloatware. Don't like it.
One of my favorite stories to tell about that very thing is my friend Melissa called me from Virginia, and she says, Harvey can't get on the internet. Here, fix it. And she hands him the phone. So here's Harvey that I don't know Harvey very well. I think I'd met him once at this point. And he's 3,000 miles away, and he's on Windows, and he can't get on the internet. Now, what are the chances that Allison is going to be able to figure this out? But he gets on the phone, and I said, so you got Norton Internet Security running on that machine? He says, yes, I do. I said, turn it off. And he goes, oh, it worked. And they think I'm like this genius that I figured this out across the country. So, yeah, I would stick with the AVG free and or maybe one of the lighter applications.
Yeah, AVG free is very good, and it's not a system hog because my parents use it and they have a fairly old machine and it's fine. McAfee is less hoggy than Norton, but Norton is the mother of all hogs. I really, really despise that software. And like you say, it causes trouble. It's really hard to uninstall under Vista. It just clenches its way into every little niche of your OS and digs its little claws in, and it does not want to let go. So if you can at all avoid it, never, ever, ever put it onto your machine would be my advice.
Okay, so
do not like it.
So that's for your antivirus. What's next?
So the other obvious one, I guess, is Zone Alarm. The Windows firewall is okay, but Zone Alarm, the free version of Zone Alarm, is a lot better, the firewall, than the Windows one. So although you could get by if you just turn on the Windows one, if you have a fairly recent version of XP or Vista, I would still strongly advise you get the free Zone Alarm.
Now, my understanding, and again, I'm not a Windows expert by any means, but my understanding is that a lot of these software-based firewalls are pretty ineffective because the first thing that the virus people do is go in and turn them off, since they're going to get access to your system if they do get in. But a hardware firewall is the first thing you should have, right?
Well, everyone actually already has quite a significant amount of protection in the form of their broadband router. If you have any sort of router at all, it does something called network address translation, which has a side effect. It's an utterly unintentional side effect, but the side effect is that it basically acts as a one-way valve. You can connect out to anything you like, but no one can connect in. So that gives you a lot of protection from the outside world. But I still think it's very good to run a firewall internally, because the chances are you're going to have more than one machine in your house. And if you do, if one guy gets infected, you'd like it to stop there.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, so we've got an antivirus, we've got a real firewall and a software firewall. What else?
The next thing, then, I think is very important is Spybot SMD, to get rid of all that junk that isn't quite a virus that APG won't get rid of, but that is nonetheless spyware, junk, and general nastiness. So Spybot SMD is very good.
Does it get rid of it, or does it block it in the first place?
Well, the latest versions do both to some extent, because the latest version will watch your registry, and it will alert you when something tries to change your registry. Mm-hmm. And you can tell it to remember that this program is allowed to do that. You know, so it doesn't constantly annoy you after a while. But if you're not in the process of installing something and a little pop-up says, hello, I'd like to stick something into your registry, it's almost certainly malware. And you'd say, I'm sorry, no.
Okay.
And that will, you know, most of the way this spyware starts up on boot is by putting itself in the registry. So if you stop that, then it won't run again next time you reboot.
Okay. Now, Spybot's also
nice
free?
There's a free version of Spybot SMD, and its main function is for cleaning, but it does nowadays also help stop you getting infected, which is also good. And then the last one is one that I would only run after something has gone wrong, or the very first time that I'm putting protection on a machine, and that's Rootkit Revealer. Rootkits are probably the worst possible type of infection to get on your machine. And by their very nature, they're designed to be oblivious. They're designed to be completely hidden. So what a rootkit does is it's at the very, very lowest level of the operating system. It's called the kernel. And it goes in there and it manipulates the kernel to the extent that its processes don't show up on the list of processes on your system. So it's actually invisible to every other program on the system. It's even invisible to the program manager. When you hit Control-Alt-Delete and get up the task manager, it'll be invisible. You will not see it, but it's running all the same. And a lot of them will just be running there, spewing out spam from your machine, and you'll be utterly oblivious to it. The only clue will be that your network light keeps flashing when you're doing nothing. So Rootkit Revealer is actually quite smart. What it does is it sort of stresses the CPU, and it notices if there's missing clock cycles.
Oh.
And so if you're not getting your whole CPU, so what else must be?
Interesting. So
is
it also free?
Up its sleeve, but yeah. It's actually, Rootkit Revealer, there's versions of it for all platforms, I think, even the Mac. But it's the kind of thing I would only run the first time to make sure that nothing has gotten in. And then as soon as I find anything, you know, as soon as anything has made it in successfully, I'd run that again to make sure nothing else made it in. Whatever the hole was, if it was enough to let one nasty thing in, it possibly let more in.
You know, I listen to a lot of security specialists talk about how these are sort of like your last resort, a lot of these things. They don't, what you really want to do is change your behavior. But then the behaviors they talk about are basically don't ever go on the internet. You know, they say things like,
if you want to be 100% safe, you take the little plug that connects to the internet and you pull it out.
Well, they say things like, well, don't click on links, don't click on attachments, you know, don't go into any dodgy websites. So basically you're allowed to go to, you know, the BBC or CNN and don't do anything else. So, I mean, if I can't click on an attachment, which is a photograph from Bart, for example, well, okay, so Bart could put it online and send me a link. But wait a minute, no, I'm not allowed to click on links either, you know, because it's a link in an email. And it's like, oh, come on, you know, you got to be able to have some fun.
It's not reasonable. And the other thing is, define reputable or not dodgy.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the first question. Oh, don't go any dodgy sites. Oh, okay, what's a dodgy site? Well, you can't put a definition on that. But,
yeah, there's clearly dodgy sites. If it has the word porn in it, you're pretty sure you're on a dodgy site. And then if it's
porn, gambling, stuff sending you dodgy meds, yeah, that's all obvious. But
right, or the BitTorrent sites where you're trading software illegally and music illegally and that sort of thing, sure, that's dodgy. But there's still zillions that are dodgy beyond that.
Yeah, and anything that has built-in advertisement is vulnerable. Because it has happened before where highly reputable sites have compromised people's machines because the ad server they're pulling their ads from was compromised and was injecting malicious ads.
Right, right.
So actually, even if you do browse very sensibly and only go to CNN and the BBC and stuff, if you go anywhere that has ads, you're still vulnerable.
So maybe the real answer is to have these protections in place, don't be a complete moron, in your surfing, yeah. But then have a really good backup strategy where when the bad thing does happen, because it will, then just have an easy way to turn around and rebuild your system from scratch and move on with your life.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think really it's vitally important, and my grandfather definitely does this, is that you keep your system completely up to date all the time. As soon as you get a Windows update, you install it. And the same goes for any of the other software if it talks to the internet. That means your mail client, that means your browser, that means your chat client. Any software whatsoever that talks to the internet, keep it absolutely, positively, completely up to date.
Right, and that's not just for Windows. That's for the Mac as well.
That's for the Mac. It's for Linux. It's for absolutely every OS. That is advice for everyone. Minimize your risk. Hover over the link in your mail to make sure that the actual place it goes to matches the link, so that you're not being spoofed into going somewhere that isn't what it says it is, because that's almost certainly dodgy. And just, you know, be careful. Copy and paste links instead of clicking on them can help a lot. And, you know, always be suspicious, I think, is sort of the most important bit of advice we can give. But if you have the big four installed, you're safer than without. You're not completely safe. So like you say, backup is vital, but you're safer. And, you know, it's all about minimizing risk, because there is no way to be 100% safe without pulling out the lead.
Right. So did you have to go to your grandfather's to go load all the stuff on there, or could you do it remotely? Or
I did it by proxy. I sent my dad.
And is your dad pretty technical, too?
Not really, but he knows which end of an executable to click on. It did involve a few phone calls as well. I'm at your grandfather's. Now what? Okay. So those calls are actually, but I don't know. Yeah, install those. Okay.
Okay.
Got it.
Good.
Yeah. Just run a scan of everything. So.
All right.
He seems to be filtered out, but, you know, I think it's, as I say, it just got me thinking about this whole thing of how Windows is the best and the worst all at once. And really, you do need to be very careful with your relatives and sort of make them all paranoid, give them the big four, and just keep reminding them to use their common sense as much as they possibly can. But there is no perfect solution, so back up.
I've been working with my father-in-law on his new Mac, and he's taken paranoia to a new limit. He's way more paranoid than I am, but I mentioned to him that he's really only got one backup, that he's got his little thumb drive that he drags his files onto. And I said, you know, in case of fire, you might be in trouble, so maybe you want to put that on your keychain or something so it's someplace other than your computer, unless you're with your computer, or put it in your car or something like that, because you're probably going to be out in your car, and which is what I do. My laptop's always in the car and my back, unless I'm with it, and my backups are at my house. And so he ran out and he bought himself another thumb drive, and he asked me, how do I copy from one thumb drive to another? And I told him, and he put it in a fire safe, and he's all set. He's just all over it. And he calls me when anything looks dodgy. So, in fact, he called me and asked me, he said, should I stop using Safari? Because he read Walter Mossberg's article talking about how Safari's got does not have the anti-phishing scheme stuff that some of the better browsers do, like Firefox and actually IE7.
Yeah, but the thing is, very, very few sites use those advanced certificates yet. So that's something for the future. And I'm sure Safari will have it by the time it becomes important.
Yeah, that's kind of what I told him. And you know, once we talked it through, he said, yeah, okay, I'm good. But he's asking the right questions, so I'm
absolutely.
He's doing great. He's just really coming along. It's pretty fun to watch him learn.
Absolutely, and I really hope that this hasn't put my grandfather off the internet, because he was really getting into it before now, and I hope that this one incident isn't going to just turn him off the whole idea, and that he's going to just pull that plug and call it quick, because I really hope that doesn't happen.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to make sure he keeps having fun, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's kind of like driving in a car is really fun, but you got to make sure you learn to wear your seatbelt, and that's all there is to it, you know?
Yeah, don't have to crash into things.
Don't go to dodgy sites, right?
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, hey, it's nice to have you back live. This was a lot of fun. We did get some good feedback on our secret bonus episode on Wednesday, so that was a lot of fun, too. But I sure like being able to have a normal kind of conversation with you here.
Yeah, definitely. It beats the hell out of them. I mean, usually when we'd start, it'd be sort of 20 minutes of us going, can you hear me now? No. Okay, well, what if I try this other computer? What if I try this other internet connection? What if I try this? What if I try that? And, I mean, it would take us easily 20 minutes to get going here. But anyway, can you hear me? Yes. Can you hear me? Yes. Oh, great.
That's a whole new thing. All right.
It really is.
Well, until next week, I think that's going to wind things up.
It is indeed. Until next time, happy computing.
Well, I hate to say goodbye on this 3-year show. It sure was fun for me. You've given me the energy to go on another 3 years or even longer after all this great feedback. If you'd like to be a part of the show through Dumb Question Corner, or you'd just like to tell me I'm wrong about something, shoot me an email at allison@podfeet.com. Or, if you'd like to send in an audio review or an audio comment, send it on over to nosillacast@gmail.com. And if you'd like to hear me drivel on throughout the week on Twitter, head on over to twitter.com/podfeet. And just go over there and push that follow button. I promise it's fascinating. Heck, just today I told Twitterville how I was making chocolate chip pancakes for 11 kids. That's good stuff. All right, I guess I better sign off. Thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.